Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Fox was for a long time the only big conservative news outlet out there, but there's now a whole universe of right-wing and far-right media. One of the major players here is The Daily Wire. Along with news, it produces documentaries, TV shows, and especially podcasts. Podcasts that feature such voices as Ben Shapiro, who talks a lot about woke college campuses, and the men's movement guru Jordan Peterson. And in this largely white male group, Candace Owens stands out. Owens got her start on YouTube early in the Trump era with a coming-out spoof that went viral.
Mom, Dad, I'm a lesbian. I like girls.
Oh, sweetheart. We always knew.
The bottom line, we just want our children to be happy. We love you regardless.
Brave soul.
Oh, thank you guys. Oh, also, I think I might be a conservative.
I don't understand.
She then emerged as a fierce supporter of President Trump.
One more question, because I'm sure you've gotten this question tons of times, but are you going to run in 2024? And if so, can I be your vice president?
Oh, that's very interesting. Wow, what a good choice that would be. That would be fantastic.
Trump Owens, 24.
So, I think it's a great, I would be huge. You would be fantastic. And, you know, I really appreciate the job you do and everybody does.
Owens commands an online following in the millions, and she's leading a movement to bring right-wing politics to a younger and more female audience. Our media reporter, Claire Malone, went to see Candace Owens recently at the offices of The Daily Wire in Nashville. Now, Claire, I just had a long talk about Tucker Carlson with our colleagues Kelly Fasane and Andrew Morantz. And we talked about whether someone like Candace Owens could succeed in his time slot on Fox News. What do you think?
I think that's a really interesting question. And I think purely on the mechanics of that job, and by that I mean speaking directly to a camera, monologuing, not having other people you need to bounce off of, Candace can do that. She can do it in the same way that Tucker Carlson or Rush Limbaugh or any other, you know, conservative talk radio person can do it. So I think she could actually do the job. There are two other factors that I think maybe would prevent her from actually doing that. One is, I would say, the sexism of cable television, right? I think people at Fox, people who run Fox, probably think that they need an anchorman in that 8 p.m. slot. I get a lot of notes whenever I'm on a podcast about the way I speak or my cadence, and I'm sure Candace would also get those. Lots of women get that feedback. So it's easier to pillory a woman in that way, and I think that would probably hold Fox execs back from giving a woman the 8 p.m. slot, personal opinion. Then the second factor, I think, is I don't know if Candace would want to do something like that. Even though the 8 p.m. slot on Fox News is a huge prestige spot in conservative media, she likes that she's speaking to a younger and specific audience on The Daily Wire. She gets to do her own thing. And I think she's got pretty free range. So I'm not sure if she would actually accept a position at Fox News.
So, Claire, very often in a story like this, there's a rosebud moment, a pivot moment in somebody's life that turns them from one thing to another. Here's a woman that began her, at least in her youth, she was a pretty standard issue liberal, African-American, left-leaning. Was there a moment where she changed radically or where she sees that she changed radically?
There's a really pivotal moment in Candace's life when she's a 17-year-old senior in high school in Stamford, Connecticut. And she was friends with this boy at school. They had a falling out. Mm-hmm. He was suspended from school. He gets angry at her, calls her and leaves her very nasty, racist, threatening voicemails while he's in the car with three other boys. Now, as it turns out, one of those boys is the 14-year-old son of then Stamford Mayor Daniel Malloy, who would later become the governor of Connecticut. And basically what happens is this turns into a good old-fashioned political scandal. And unfortunately for Candace, she is the 17-year-old at the center of it. She was out of school for 6 weeks. When she comes back, she's surrounded by her family members and the NAACP. There's a lot of local discourse about whether or not she's just, you know, faking all of this for attention. And I think what Candace took away from that experience was she didn't like being a victim. She didn't like feeling powerless. And, you know, I think there was a lot of personal fallout for her from that moment. You know, she talks about it as sort of the moment where she lost control. She developed an eating disorder, she says, as a reaction to that. She wanted to regain control. And I think even in her life, you know, she's a 30-something-year-old woman now, a huge narrative in, you know, when she speaks to her social media followers or she speaks on her podcast, she talks about shedding a victim mentality.
That is kind of your persona, right? Like, tough, tough girl.
Tough life. You know? And I think that it sets me apart. It shouldn't. You heard me speak to this today. I think it's really weird that we live in this society where everyone's hand is being held at all times and they're being told they're amazing and they're great. And they're obviously not amazing. And they're obviously not great. They could be. They could be better than they were yesterday. We all have bad days. I certainly have them. And so, you know, life's tough. Get a helmet, I guess, is kind of my perspective. If we all sat around and kumbaya'd and held hands like Drew Barrymore and Dylan Mulvaney, we'd never get off the floor.
Okay, and to explain that last little jab, Drew Barrymore now has a talk show, The Drew Barrymore Show. And on it, Drew Barrymore had this sort of admittedly kind of awkward TV moment where she kneeled in front of this sort of infamous in conservative circles trans influencer named Dylan Mulvaney. And that's a kind of pop culture moment that Candace really latches onto because her thing now is talking about pop culture, being very fluent in it, but also telling her listeners, here's what's perverse about it. And Candace is very, very anti-trans.
How does she differ, if she differs at all, other than the age of her audience, from Sean Hannity, Tucker Carlson, and that group?
Well, I think perhaps first and foremost, though she came into our consciousness as this gung-ho Trump supporter and sort of focusing on electoral politics, we were all glued to the Trump administration and what was going on. I think she's made this interesting shift, and she chalks it up to becoming a mother. She now has two kids, where she's focusing a lot more on culture issues. So pop culture, even things like, you know, vaccines. She does not believe in any kind of vaccination. You know, the cleanliness of household products. There's a little bit of a, a conspiratorial mindset at work, right? Be suspicious of everything that's presented to you by mainstream culture. But Candace is really focusing on pop culture as something that conservatives have ignored and something that it's important for them not to ignore. And Candace and I talked a lot about her audience and what maybe makes it different from other Daily Wire hosts. So if you think about someone like Ben Shapiro, he has a pretty male audience. And she told me that Jeremy Boring, who's the Daily Wire CEO, he told her that her audience is actually special and different from other Daily Wire hosts.
Teenagers to 90-year-olds consume my content, which is super interesting. I think that one thing that we've realized is a lot of moms follow me. I have a very strong mother demographic, and I think that's because a lot of stuff I speak about that I'm passionate about is children, so that makes sense. I mean, yoga pants, who's going to watch that and be like,
it's
going to
totally
be moms, so, which I have fun with. I am very proud of the work that I do. Especially because a lot of it speaks to moms on left and the right. So that was kind of a very exciting time for me.
All right. So she's against yoga pants. First of all, I'd like to know what that signifies. But when she talks about a mom demographic, what other topics is she talking about and why?
Yeah. And just to quickly explain the yoga pants, Candace has a sort of half-joking, half-serious thing that American women look too sloppy. They need to try harder. They need to beautify themselves. And actually that's it's silly, and she knows it's a little silly, but it's connected to this bigger thing and this of what she's talking to her audience about, which is basically traditionalism.
Sure.
She thinks that women should be women and men should be men. And Candace sort of acts that out via social media, via a podcast. This is what a woman should be. She should cook dinner for her husband. She should garden. She should beautify herself. And she should care about her children's school, what's happening, you know, what pronouns are they trying to get your children to use at school is an example that Candace brought up to me. So I think Candace is she's actually talking about issues that a lot of Americans think about. Now, is the way that Candace approaches this smart? I don't know. She has really harsh language. She has really a lot of retrograde ideas.
Someone said to me, like, I think of Candace Owens as sort of like the Phyllis Schlafly of the Instagram age, because she's like pushing sort of traditional feminine roles.
I love my femininity. I celebrate femininity. I tell women this weird culture of telling women to de-beautify themselves and to be more masculine. I mean, it's just bad. It's just bad, you know? I believe that femininity is an absolute gift. It should be treated as such. I am the opposite of Lena Dunham, I think would be fair to say. Like, whatever she brought in, I am the opposite of that. You know, the, like, girls are like, I haven't shaved my armpits and this is encouraging. And, like, you know, I'm overweight and now you need to, if you don't like it, there's something wrong with you, you know? Which I challenge it the other way. It's like, you don't need to be a size zero, right? There's opposite extremes and they're not healthy. But to take care of yourself? When did we start looking down on taking care of yourself?
Phyllis Schlafly, who, for those who don't remember, was a kind of anti-feminist activist who organized against the Equal Rights Amendment in the 70s. And then you have Lena Dunham, who, of course, was the originator and star of the show Girls, which projected, think it's fair to say, a very different view of the world than Phyllis Schlafly. She thinks this is a winner. Is she wrong?
You know, Candace, again, picks out these moments in pop culture where, yeah, you know, maybe an audience does have a reaction to not shaving your armpits or, you know, trans activists being on TV and talking about their experience. Maybe people are uncomfortable with those things that go outside, you know, the traditional, to use the freshman year gender studies class term, the performance of gender. But again, she does it in this really harsh, cutting way.
Exactly.
And I talked a lot about that with her. I said, you know, even if you believe that you are on the right side of history on all those issues, isn't there something she said for persuasion? You catch more flies with honey than you do with vinegar. But I would also say that, you know, the way she tells it, she's also trying to pierce this liberal Hollywood thought bubble.
The problem when there is just an applause and you think it's great and it's a Hollywood applause and you see your favorite actors, like if I was a kid and saw Denzel Washington applauding something, mm-hmm. I'm like, oh my gosh, well, I think he's so cool, then it must be cool. You have to answer that. You have to say it's not cool, actually. Let me actually make you understand what this really entails. Because if you go down this route and you decide to take puberty blockers, again, using the example of Dylan Mulvaney, because we're talking about trans issues, here's what can happen to your body. And here is why I bring you Walt Heyer. Here's why I bring you these other people that went through this route. Mm-hmm. Here's why I bring people that are suing their doctors. You talk to culture because it needs a response.
And just so people know, Walt Heyer, who Candace is referring to there, is someone who lived for a few years as a transgender woman and then detransitioned.
So you can't fight culture by refusing to talk about it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't even make sense. And this has been, in my opinion, a huge reason that conservatives ceded so much ground to the left, because we stuck up our nose to culture. I don't stick up my nose to culture. Mm-hmm. I consume culture, and it is very important for me to contextualize culture so that for all the young teenagers that are following me, rather than just seeing Dylan Mulvaney pretending to be a woman and receiving awards and being applauded by Hollywood and sitting down with Drew Barrymore and thinking, wow, that's really cool, they now have somebody talking about this and saying, actually, this isn't cool. So now they can start thinking critically, which makes more sense to me.
So she made some pretty explosive comments about gender during your interview, and she does that routinely. She's also extremely provocative on race, like last fall when she and Kanye West, who she's close to, showed up to Paris Fashion Week in matching shirts that said, "White Lives Matter." What kind of argument were those two trying to make?
This is the argument that has kind of been Candace's bread and butter since she broke out. She talks about how Black Americans, in her phraseology, need to leave the plantation of the Democratic Party. And she's purposely provocative in that language. She's been extremely critical of the Black Lives Matter movement and about George Floyd in particular. Here's what she said on her show the day that the verdict was delivered for Derek Chauvin.
I have to appreciate people that were trying to create a pressure campaign for me on Twitter saying, I wonder what Candace is going to say. Even Republicans agreed that this was the right call. I don't care who agrees that this was the right. I don't care if it's a Republican. I don't care if it's a Democrat. I don't care if it's a white person. I don't care if it's a Black person. I am not so much of an intellectual coward that because the mob decides something, because the lie about George Floyd and the way that he lived his life has become so big that we just have to now accept it as the truth. And believe me, this is a lie.
So the lie she's referring to is what she sees as the media whitewashing of Floyd's personal shortcomings. She made a documentary that focused heavily on his history of addiction, and Candace continues to say that Floyd died from an overdose, though that was determined not to be the primary cause of his death.
This is a hard question, but how sincere is she about what she says about George Floyd? Yes, we know George Floyd's life was complicated. Nobody is disputing that. But isn't this just a naked grab for audience, attention, and everything that goes with it?
You're right, it is a hard question. And I talked to Leah Wright-Rigor, who's a scholar who wrote a book called The Loneliness of the Black Republican. And she's someone who thinks a lot about Candace. And Leah puts Candace in this category of racial provocateur, of which there's a long history in the U.S. But I think what's different about Candace is the technology that she's operating with. Do I think she believes those very personal critiques of George Floyd? Yes, I do. I think that she's got a very contrarian, conspiratorial worldview, and she immediately reacted to what she saw was an undue hagiography of a flawed person. I also think she can be quite harsh in her judgments of people. I also think she knows very cynically what subjects will go viral. And so being a provocateur, talking about George Floyd in this really mean way, she knows will go viral. And this digital age means that Candace's platform technology helps amplify what is a small group of right-wing Black Americans saying really outre things, in some ways giving cover for white Americans who think that the George Floyd story is a conspiracy to say, oh, well, look, a Black person said it. You know, I'm not being racist if I say this thing. So Candace is providing cover.
Finally, let's look at 2024, and I want to listen carefully to this exchange that you had with Candace Owens about what she thinks might be the crucial culture war issues in the presidential race coming up.
I mean, it really mattered when moms started showing up at the school boards and realizing what was in the books. I think moms are starting to pay more attention to what's happening, and it's not necessarily just transgenderism. It's everything that's happening in the classroom. And suddenly it feels like we're in a custody dispute with the state for our children, right? And I think that moms are responding to that. So I do think that me speaking to mothers, I hope it will have real-world implications in the election, because it's usually moms that are opening up the mail, speaking with their husbands about, you know, who to vote for. I hope that I encourage mothers to be more tuned into that sort of a thing. I think that some of the toxicity surrounding feminism and why I shirk away from it is that it encouraged mothers to just trust the state to raise their kids. And you go get a job and be like dad and be like men, and this will put you on equal footing.
You have a job, though.
I have no issue with women having jobs at all. Obviously, I have a job.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that there was this pressure that basically said to women that if you stay at home and you are instead spending all your time doing this, then it's because you're serving the patriarchy. And I had that brainwashing taking place at my university when I was forced to take a women's studies class. And they basically, that was the whole point. Men are awful, men are terrible. And the one way that you can beat men is to compete with them at every level. I don't feel that way anymore. I don't feel like I want to compete with men. And I, again, give women permission to aspire to be a stay-at-home mom.
All right, let's leave aside the assertion that she was forced to take a women's studies class. That bears checking. But she is using the word over and over again. It's like a mantra, moms, moms, mm-hmm. I'm speaking to you. Do you think in the upcoming race that could really help? You've got all these male culture warriors on the right. You've got DeSantis himself, who's making culture more and more and more the center of his campaign, and Trump, of course. Do you think this works for the Republicans?
I do think it works to appeal to women. I mean, Mitch McConnell, the night of the 2020 election, I believe, said, We lost too many women. I mean, I think this is something that the Republicans know. And I do think that there's something to be said for moms, for suburban women turning out in elections. We saw it in 2016 and 2 years ago in Virginia, when suburban women swung to the right and voted in a governor who campaigned on COVID-era school closures and education policy. People vote based on real worry about their kids. You can't find any issue more personal than that. And I think Candace is poised to have an influence on this group that her peers at the Daily Wire aren't. She's a mom. She's speaking directly to other moms, which is something that her male counterparts like Ben Shapiro can't replicate. That said, she has a really harsh tone and a conspiratorial mindset that I'm not sure would appeal to women in the middle.
Claire, thanks so much for your terrific reporting on this. Good talking to you.
Good talking to you, David.
You can find Claire Malone's article, The Gospel of Candace Owens, at NewYorker.com.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.